Did you see the picture of the guest star, Chris?
The picture of the guest star
In
In,
Freebooters chat.
yeah. Where
Oh
there was
yeah.
actually a moment when we got it looking really perfect, but Drew didn't capture it fast enough. I should have been recording it. That's what I should have been doing, as I am now.
Wow.
I like to
Okay,
sneak up on
brilliant.
YouTube. Oh, incidentally, did you like where I cut off the last one?
Yes.
Yes. Goose afternoon.
Yeah, I like that as well. That's it.
So Dandelion Sky, do we know what that's a reference to? Because I don't.
I think I do. I think it's when James Holden puts his hand in the thing and gets the vision. You've essentially got a sphere with lots of things in it. When all the holes open to presumably distant worlds, I'm assuming like this mechanism is this holes to distant worlds. That's how the proto molecule has seeded itself in. So it's like so that
Oh.
from if you imagine. So they're inside a sphere. If you imagine it from the out, there is no outside, but imagine it from the outside, it's a sphere with, seeds or
Yep, I'm liking that. That's good.
Okay, yeah,
Did
no.
you
That might
also?
be bollocks, but that's what
No, it
I
makes sense. It makes
dandelions,
sense.
that's
That's
yeah,
how
no, that's
dandelions
yeah.
work. I was going to say there is one thing. To mention. Ooh. Ooh, right. Sorry, I'm reading stuff at the same time as I'm thinking and talking. What I was going to say is, have you heard of Blue Harvest? Do you know what Blue Harvest was?
No, but there's a Family Guy episode named after it.
It
Doesn't
was.
that
Sorry, on you
rings a
go.
bell? But I know rings a bell, but I don't know.
It's basically it's a code name for Star Wars episode.
Oh.
Oh, because they made one when they did the parody, the
The
Family Guy
parody,
Star Wars
yeah, they
parody.
called
They
it
called one of them.
that.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I think I remember that factoid somewhere. Yeah. So.
It was a fake working title for Return of the Jedi. It was so that they had a title that was, so people wouldn't go, "Oh, there's a Star Wars film being made there. Let's go and hang around the studio or whatever." Anyway,
They do that a lot. Yeah.
I have a question about factoid. Does factoid mean a small fact, or does it mean something that resembles a fact but isn't?
I mean, it's like a small fact.
But when we usually use oid, it's something that is like a thing but isn't the thing.
Asteroid?
A spheroid is not a sphere.
What about asteroid?
Asteroid. Asteroid. I assume is a
No,
different suffix, but I don't know for sure.
oh, I
Like
do.
a
It's
like.
just.
An ovoid is something egg-shaped that isn't an egg. A
Well,
spheroid is
the Earth
something.
is an oblate spheroid.
Yeah, exactly. It isn't a sphere, but it's like a sphere.
It's an oblate
Okay.
spheroid.
I guess.
I love the
I
asteroid
don't.
coming out right away, and
I
you're
mean,
like.
if we want to be completely honest,
I
a
need to
fact.
etymology asteroid now. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, asteroid. I thought you were going to go with factoid. I think it's just a cutesy way of saying fact, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just one of those
You know
journalistic things, I think.
how I
Yeah.
feel about cutesy.
Well, no, I think
I'll
a
poo
factoid
off.
is a fact is a fact that you can fit in a tiny little, you can explain it in a very short
Ooh.
way, basically.
Yes, that's the
And I think it comes into
Astra.
journal. Sorry, hang on before I forget this. Journalistically, it's because they would make those little box outs and stuff, so that it could fit in it was basically a small, like a little filler article in
I
journalism.
think using factoid
Factoid.
journalistically is a little bit like covering your ass. Like, oh, I didn't say it was a, like saying it's this is a fact is
I see what
stronger
you're
than
saying.
saying
Yeah,
it's a factoid.
factoid,
But asteroid, so aster is star,
Star, yeah.
and oid, yeah, form, shape, blah blah blah. So oid means of the form of, but not necessarily. I'm curious about what whether factoid originally meant something that appears to be a fact but isn't.
Oh, right. It never, because it came to mean those little things that, as I say, journalistic things or
I heard it on the radio a lot.
television, radio, magazines, all that sort of thing.
Okay, so I hate resorting to definitions, like, but I'm not. Mm. This is an argumentative thing. So factoid, something resembling a fact, unverified, often invented information that is given credibility because it appeared in print.
Oh, there you go.
Well.
So the kind of things that they'll debunk on, like, QI or something.
Yeah. I suppose it's not as hard as a fact, is it?
Everybody knows this, but, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, I think this is a fact, but I'm not sure.
Thankfully, the reason I brought this up in the first place is still on the screen in front of me, so I haven't forgotten it.
What are you eating, Hamish? Nuts?
No, M&Ms. I've got like a... I got like a bazillion tiny bags. They look bigger there, but look, you know, tiny. I've got like a bazillion tiny bags of M&Ms for my Christmas thing.
Mm.
That sent my mind down a path, because they're mini M&Ms, right? But like mini M&Ms.
No, the M&Ms are varying sizes, but some of them are.
Oh, okay.
Some of them are the mini ones. It's like an M&Ms variation set, but all the bags are smaller than a full bag.
They could take it further and get M&Ms to the point where you can just inhale them. But then I thought that's just basically snuff. And then I remember that because I've been watching Call My Bluff, and what's his face on Call My Bluff? Chris's dad. He does snuff. Like, he does snuff on the show, which is kind of interesting.
I once did snuff with an old man outside of a pub.
How was it? Because I feel like, I've never done it, but I feel like I would just sneeze for like 2 hours.
It's all right. It didn't do much to me. Maybe it's not a funny colour for a bit. It's a bit gross, if I'm honest.
He did snuff. He did snuff with an old man outside of a pub.
It was very old man in the country. Like, oh, well, I'm drunk and best get home to the missus. Fancy.
I was imagining like Chris doing a crack pipe and going, yeah, I like snuff.
Even better. Anywho, the point that I was making out of all of this, bringing it back, crazily enough, bringing it back to The Expanse, was Abaddon's Gate, the book that we're on, was originally, the pre-release name before they finally named it, was Dandelion Sky. Because they give it right peanut, on you go, bud. They give it like a working title while they're working on it. And then the
Abaddon is something biblical, isn't it?
There's various things. Yeah, I'll get to that in a second as well.
Okay,
I'm prepared. each book is named for some mythological thing, from historical mythology. So the previous name is Dandelion Sky, and I think you're spot on as to the naming of it, why it was called that.
I'm just trying to find whether Dandelion Sky is like a reference to a song or like a literary.
I don't think so.
Doesn't
ring any bells. No.
Like googling it, all I get is The Expanse. So it's
exactly. Yeah. But Abaddon's Gate technically means the gate to hell, or it's the gate to the pit. Abaddon is a pit. Like a hell type pit.
That sounds like Lazarus. Is that of Greek origin? That sounds Greek.
There's actually a few different connected around about, you know, Roman and Greek, and you know, there's like the name is a wee bit slightly bastardizing from one to the other sort of thing, and it's in I think Hebrew have got it, so it's in the in the Hebrew scriptures and stuff.
Which one's the Lazarus one? Is that
Lazarus? That's he's the guy that rose from the dead.
Mm.
What am I thinking of?
I think I know what you're thinking of. It's like a similar word or something.
Like a three-headed dog, is it?
Oh, Cerberus.
Cerberus.
I thought you were talking about the books of the Abyss, books of the Expanse, rather.
Oh no! I would never spoil myself.
I don't think Judaism doesn't have a heaven and hell. I'm interested.
I mean, to be fair, that's just me. I've heard Catholics not say that they don't believe in a hell.
Well, there's no. I don't think there's any. I don't think Catholic. I forget. No, I forget. I forget what this is. Yeah, there's something.
You'll burn in hell.
I don't think the Bible specifically talks about hell, because the Jewish text doesn't. Mm. Yeah, although that might be because Catholics made up a lot of shit. And then Protestants made up a lot of shit.
Made up.
Sorry, but I think it's made up.
I think a lot of if hell is a thing, it's certainly been made a bigger thing in recent centuries as a way of punishing.
Yeah,
people,
as a puritanical
right?
Like, well, ideas and things. Mm.
I don't think Catholicism talks about hell much. I might be wrong on that, but Protestants love the idea of hell because.
Oh, well, I've never heard hell that much really growing up either. I think it almost feels like an American thing.
It's certain like sects within Protestantism, I think, make a bigger deal of hell and like the idea of the devil tempts you to do bad. Like I've said before, like I think
Jesus in the desert, right? The 40 days, 40 nights.
The Catholic conception of evil, as I understand it, is that it's the absence of good. Like it's not an active force that tempts you into doing bad. It's just when you don't do good, you are evil, basically, which is, I think, a better, a more healthy way of looking at evil.
I mean it's certainly a more sensible perspective because it's like I can't imagine. I think even the things the most like there are some people that know that must know they're evil, right? Like Joseph Fritzl, right?
I don't know if anybody thinks they're evil.
Everybody thinks they're hearing their own story,
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know. But like, if there was someone that thought of themselves as evil, I think maybe even someone like Elon Musk might even not necessarily think of himself as evil, but
he thinks no, he thinks he's a fucking hero. That's the problem.
He thinks he's
deluded.
The fucking like savior of humanity or something.
I think he thinks he's Bob Page. You know what I mean? Like, I think
But Bob Page wouldn't think he was evil, would he? That's the thing. I don't think... Like, you know, you go into extremes like Hitler... thought he was fixing things.
Why is Hitler always taken as the most evil? I mean, he wasn't even the most evil of his own gang.
He's the leader, it's like Trump symbolizes, it's no surprise or mistake to have
Musk seen as the actual up incoming president, you know, because Trump is basically, you know, President Man, how he'll repeat whatever the last person said, or he'll go with whatever.
Trump is like that.
And he thinks Musk is, you know, he loves Musk because he's the exact kind of bullshitter that fits into Trump's worldview.
If we can sneak a communist into Trump's cabinet, we're sorted.
Yeah, basically.
I genuinely think that's kind of possible.
A charismatic communist.
Yeah. Although it fits in with like the Joe Rogan American man, if you know what I mean. Like Joe Rogan is a little bit, he's like podcast man. For the same sort of reasons, is that he will engage with the person sitting across from him at the table and believe everything they say without question. Mm. And then the next person comes along and will say something completely different. Oh, yes, sir. Like I've seen some good guests on the show. I don't watch the show very much, but I've seen he's had in the past, less so now, some like pretty solid, substantially left-wing guests. Mm. And he's had Bernie Sanders on and he really liked Bernie Sanders. And then Trump comes on and he really likes Trump.
I think he endorsed Sanders in 2016, or 2020, one of the two. I swear he endorsed very close Sanders at some point.
Like, he was certainly very favourable towards him if he didn't, But that's the thing. He believes with whoever's sitting... Like, as long as someone can connect with him in that way, and that's why I think that's...
I don't know. I mean, I don't know any... I wouldn't watch the guy because, you know, I've heard about him. Mm. And I don't watch YouTube generally.
You wouldn't like him.
No,
but I think we're all like that.
Some of the best interviewers are people that just—they're much more. They're like a sponge for whatever's there. They're not passing judgment or pushing things either way. They're just good at getting people to keep saying what they're there to say.
I think this is very lowbrow, but what's his name on BBC? Wogan. Does it like a late night?
Oh, not Wogan.
Graham Norton. I think he's a phenomenally good interviewer.
I hear people say that.
Because he doesn't
It's very pop culture. It's very, you know, it's very lowbrow. But I think he's an excellent interviewer. His guests say things that I think they wouldn't say on other shows.
He does make them sort of relax. I think that Paul O'Grady was a bit like that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm going to say that Alan Carr as well. Alan Carr does the chatty man thing, isn't
that? Yeah.
And it's he gets like some pretty big stars on what looks like a cheesy Channel 4 or 5, whichever it is, type thing, you know. And they have a drink and everything, you know.
That president man quality of agreeing with the last thing we heard. I think we're all. I'm definitely considerably like that. I think we're all a bit
so
like
am
that. And I think that's
more than I wish there was. Yeah.
I think that's kind of.
I was hoping Chris would say something different, or so I could go, oh, actually.
And I think that's to an extent that's a problem with. I mean, that's what advertising relies on.
We're just very easily manipulable
in that regard. And, you know, during political campaigning, that's kind of the problem is, you know, it's if you're told something that sounds factual.
What's
sounds
the last
reasonable.
Thing you heard? Is that how you're going to vote?
Yeah.
I doubt it would sway somebody like us. You know, for me, it's a. Anyway, let's.
But also, we like to believe
too
best
complicated
in people.
For me to think
like,
about.
All of us. You know, I think we just like to take people because I think we like to live in a world where people aren't overly suspicious of each other.
Well, that's what corporations take advantage of. That's why they like presenting themselves as if they are a person and use phrases like I was saying the other day, like reach out rather than contact, like soften their language, make themselves sound like a person. And then with that part of our brain where we want to trust people. People do better when we trust each other. We want to trust people, and that part of our brain kicks in, and then we're. Buying shit that
should we bomb LinkedIn?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Sorry to
stick that.
Sorry to upset Adam Wilbert there. Actually.
Adam Wilbert.
Yeah.
Shout
out to Adam Wilbert.
I mean, we'll wait until everyone's gone home for the night. We're not with the people in it. We'll just make it.
Yeah, we're not monsters. just terrorists.
They're not evil.
Your videos are giving me a fun excuse to watch the show again with you all. Thanks for that. You're more than welcome. That's kind of. I was going to say that's kind of the point or the aim, but that would suggest far too much active planning on our part. It's not the aim.
It was an embedded hope.
Let's give it that, and he also said, in regard to the Behemoth's figurehead, we see it snap off when Drummer is retrieving the Nauvoo in episode 4, when the drone swarm are turning the ship around. But he also says, that's not to say Diogo didn't go back for it with a specialised net technology. You tickled us all with that. Thank you very much. Yeah. That was very good.
It reminded me a couple of episodes ago, I meant to say this, I think... a certain shot of the Behemoth, I think it's still got tugs attached to it, you know, the little drone tug things. I think it's still got those attached to it, so maybe like I like the idea because they're belters and you know they're very like I think they say in this episode when they're talking about using the farm equipment as probes, like you use what you've got kind of thing. The idea of because the Behemoth not
a very
maneuverable
thing to say,
not a very maneuverable ship.
No, it's meant to get lined up and something
and go accelerate
like a mofo.
Yeah. But a bunch of tugs on it swarming around it, helping it maneuver. Like that's very belter.
Yeah, although what is kind of interesting is that Kamina does sort of say to Ashford, like when Ashford's saying, look, we should have, you know, Naomi on this ship, or it's a shame.
We'll go back to that in a minute.
And she goes, yeah, but, you know, I'm going to fix up some farm drones. Captain's got to know her ship.
Yeah, that was quite good. Yeah, she's got her back to him and she goes, slightly. Well, as much as she shows any expression, there's a very hint of smugness about it.
Yes.
But yeah, no, here we go. There's one of my, I don't have physical notes this week, but it's definitely one of my notes in my brain is, right, after our discussion about Ashford and his motives and intentions, how do you feel about the conversation he had there? Is there still manipulation going on? Or did it backfire?
Which one of those do you think it is? When I was watching it, I was like, oh, I was wrong about, like, this doesn't really fit with what I thought last, because that seems like he's annoyed that Kamina let Naomi.
Do you think he was manipulated to get to that point where they met in the, outside the skiff, and he was hoping that she would just get annoyed, that Kamina would get annoyed but still keep her aboard?
No, I think there's two possibilities. Either he, like, I misread that first situation and he was trying to get Naomi to stay, or he wanted Naomi to leave so that he could have this interaction with Kamina where he's saying, like, you this need is your my fault. Help.
Yeah, yeah.
You let your chief engineer leave. That wouldn't have happened had you trusted me. Like, I think that's possible.
I think the first one you say is much more likely. I think the second
I like the second one more though.
The second one sounds like you've woven a narrative after the events have happened, rather than the first one. Does. Oh, you're blipping out, Drew. Does he need to do the VPN again?
Yeah,
possibly. Or is it? Oh no, you're back. You're Amber.
Red, yellow. Yep. He's Amber now. Sorry.
I'll leave it alone in case it does it again. I think it's more likely that the first one is right, but I enjoy the second one more, so I'm going to believe that. And I don't think it's beyond, because he does want Drummer to trust him more. He wants Drummer to rely on him and not so it does fit that.
Mm.
For him to talk Naomi into leaving and then berate the captain for letting Naomi leave and say, like, you know, you need me, but essentially that fits.
It does seem uncomfortable with the hint of mutiny though.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, the thing is,
and she picks up on that, and he does apologize for that part for making it a public scene.
I think his motivations are, he genuinely wants to, he believes in this unified Belter thing, and he wants to do, he thinks his job as Kamina's aide is important to that, and Kamina's not quite on board, and he wants to do his job well, essentially. I think that's his motivation. Sorry, Chris, go on.
I think that's fair, but Kamina did call him out when it's like, I bet you went off and said to one of your lieutenants,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
like, oh, and I bet you told them all about how important it is to respect the captain.
Well, she doesn't trust him. Yeah, she doesn't trust him. And that's where we leave. She's essentially expressing distrust in him. And he says, we've really got to sort this out. And that, again, depending on whether you think he's loyal or not, that's an ambiguous statement. And then that's the last we see of them in that episode, I think. And that's...
Also,
a little bit cliffhangery in a cool way. Yeah,
but that's... I mean, that's kind of interesting in so far that, it does kind of make sense that if Ashford were to try and mutiny the ship, or if Belter's got behind him on a mutiny, even if Ashford didn't want to do it himself, he prepped by saying you should respect your captain to the hilt, so that when he does become captain...
Yeah, that's what she was suggesting, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that was a real... She spotted that technique. I personally...
It's a win-win for him, really.
Kind of, yeah. But I personally think that this is a bit of a red herring in terms of the narrative. I think what you say, Drew, is correct, that he genuinely believes in the cause. And I think they're just trying to be like, well, there will be tensions, right? We know tensions because different...
Well, they're all new to this as well.
None of them apparently. Like... Well, it's a navy with one ship.
Yeah.
You know, they've all just joined a navy that didn't exist before, you know.
I think Ashford's
I think Ashford's a true believer. I think when he says we've got to work out this problem or whatever, I think he means I've got to find a way to make you to realize. You can trust me.
I think he's genuine, and he's just making mistakes himself and learning as he goes, just the same as everybody else.
It is ambiguous, but I feel,
no, as we say, teleological thing. Honestly, just from my memory of things, because the problem is I know the books a bit as well, so I'm trying not to get mixed up with the books, because this crossover part is very different in the books. So I feel like he's doing the same thing as Kamina and as the others. He's like learning as he goes. He's making mistakes. And I think he's genuine about, like, oh shit, yeah, we shouldn't have done that in front of the crew, and you know, blah blah.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's all.
I've taken him at face value, but I can still feel that slight possibility, basically.
Well, I think we're all saying we trust Ashford, but we can also, I assume, we'd all also agree that like Kamina's not being unreasonable. Like, it's not an unreasonable distrust.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
especially not with Diogo being such a hothead, and immediate, you know, I mean, if you watch back and see the bit where he says to get Naomi off the bridge, Diogo's like, grab, you know,
she probably
would have kicked his arse, really, but
yeah.
If she wasn't distracted by anything else, it's like, what the fuck are you doing, you little shit?
Diogo crush ass to dust.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Lieutenant Diogo.
Yeah, so Lieutenant Diogo is a wee bit of a dick at the moment, I think.
Yeah. I like it. He's a teenager. He's just he's a great.
And he's a teenager that got a promotion, you know? Like.
Yeah.
He's a teenager with the Hitler Youth uniform. Oh, I mean,
but he's also.
You're the OPA.
I like the uniform.
I was joking about Diogo, not the OPA. Don't start. Yeah,
I think there's something of Amos to Diogo in that, like he's a teenagers are fucking idiots. We've all been teenagers. You're an idiot when you're a teenager.
I've not.
But I think he's been through things that are kind of traumatic. That will grow you up quick. When his uncle dumped him in space and thought his uncle was killing him, and he's adrift in space for however many days or whatever. And then the assault on, the station, then Eros, and like he's been through a lot, and that's going to grow you up. But he's still not got, he's not got the sort of like the wisdom or whatever to quite choose the right path based on that. But he realizes he has to choose a path. And I think he's an interesting character. I think he's had about five scenes in the show. And yet,
everybody knows
such depth to his character, so many interesting, dynamics.
I like when they do characters like that, when you can see him grow over time. I guess he's not being particularly duplicitous. Like, he just goes to Ashford and says, I don't like the way a drummer talks to you. I think you should be captain. Like, I mean, that isn't something you probably should say on a ship unless you're... But like, I mean, again, he's a teenager. Mm. He's not sneaking behind anyone's back
Well, I think he's also, and we see this right from the beginning when we first meet him, when he's trying to be a gangster. Like, whatever he's into 100%.
Yeah.
So he's Ashford's man. So like, he wants Ashford to be the boss, and like, he's 100% loyal to Ashford. And
this is where the sort of teenagery, not quite smart thing comes in. Like, and Ashford does actually say to him, so you should stop talking.
I like Ashford's little speech about all the cool stuff he's done. Like, I've drank rum from an Admiral's cup, and I've snuck past a Martian battle group.
I was going to say, we get more information, and his only child burned to death.
Which
explains his scars a bit by the looks of it.
I
do kind of feel like that didn't necessarily, like, he just that wasn't necessarily relevant to the conversation at hand.
No, but it was cool. It was saying, you're a baby, you haven't lived yet. Mm. Like, I've got experience and wisdom, shut the fuck up. I think it works for that.
Okay, yeah, I'll take that. Yeah. Other than that, is there much revelation on in the behemoth?
No, it's just it's the stuff on the behemoth is all Drummer and Dashford's relationship, I think.
Yeah,
and they go through the ring on this one, don't they?
Yeah, no, previous one
they've already.
With the big speech and the dum 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 dum.
That's the last one. So we're getting through these so quickly. I've got to remember which one's which.
Yeah.
And the investigator floating through space with Holden is the...
Yeah.
I noticed that you were being careful to call him the investigator. Or...
I noticed that too.
To me, he's Miller. I know he's not, but to me, he's Miller.
No, I know, but he is. That's what...
No, I'm just saying it's interesting.
The thing that the protomolecule intelligence, whatever it is, calls him the investigator. Explicitly.
Yeah.
And he also is, I mean, it's a wee bit Star Trek, the motion picture. The Ilea character comes back.
She's actually just
a probe in the shape of Ilea. And that's kind of what this is.
I think he's more Miller than she was.
It's not so deeply buried or whatever, but
But we know this is, it depends. I mean, I think I need to know more about the protomolecule. But if the protomolecule,
there's a lot to pick up in these couple of episodes. If you listen to, especially what Miller, especially what the investigator says, he explicitly says a lot of stuff, and he explains. Mm. There's a huge revelation in this episode. Once they get about the station and everything, but let's not jump ahead of ourselves a little bit. On you go.
Yeah, but if it, if the proton molecule, sort of absorbs and interacts with the world around it, does that mean the world around it then becomes part of it? Ergo, Miller is a part of the proton molecule, and ergo, this is Miller.
I've got a couple of things to say. Okay. First of all, I think we explicitly, so they talk about free will. And Miller sort of almost mocks Holden for thinking he's been making free choices, which, you know, it's just
plays into your little pet theory, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there's two ways to read that. Either he's saying reality is like, we don't see reality. What we see is, you know, the cave wall. Like, reality is deeper. What we see is A, emergent, and B, just based on our senses. Like, so reality is just pushing buttons in our brains. But I read it more that the proton molecule has been pushing buttons in Holden's brain the whole way along to get him to this point. Same as Miller, same as Julie. That's how I read that. And also, as to whether Miller is Miller, I mean, it gets metaphysical, right? Like, if you make an artificial brain, pretend that this is a thing that we can do. We make an artificial brain and put my memories and experiences and blah, blah, blah in it and switch it on. Mm-hmm. And you can converse with that artificial brain. It, you know, it has my experiences, memories. It would respond exactly as I would. Is that me or not? And
it's a copy of you.
I would say yes. I would say that is as much me as I am me. And in that sense, I think Miller, that is as much Miller. It's a different Miller, but that is as much Miller as Flesh Miller was to me. But I do think it's so metaphysical that it's basically, it's do you believe in God? It's a faith question. Which way do you lean?
Are you asking that question? Which way do we lean?
Yeah.
I think it's a copy.
You think it's a copy? It's not Miller. It's explicitly not Miller.
It's a Miller. It's a probe with an awful lot of Miller's information. And you're being fooled by the form of the probe and the mannerisms and all that stuff. More than anything else.
Yeah, it feels like that, doesn't it?
Because the things that it says are things that Miller wanted to know, for sure. But it's the things that Holden wants to know as well. It's the what's going on here. Well, I mean, like I say, there's the big revelation of what everything is happens. It may be a bit of a flash, but you know, but also the investigator says brings a lot of it. And we know now what it is. We know now what the ring is. It's part of something much bigger.
I agree with everything you say, but I think this is why I say it basically comes down to like faith, because I think I see it sort of more semiologically. Like if it has the qualities of an orange, then we call it an orange. This thing has the quality, you know, if it literally, if it walks like a duck, it's, you know, this thing has the qualities of Miller. It's a Miller.
It's a Miller. Yeah, I'll give you that. It's a Miller. Yeah, I'll accept it's a Miller as in a copy of Miller. It's not Miller, but I know what you're saying. I get your drift. I'm not missing the point. Yeah. I lean slightly.
Yeah.
So the fact that the copy of Miller that we see has a hat must mean that it, like, and the fact that James Holden never saw Miller in a hat must mean that there is some proto molecule presence on Ceres before all of this story happened. Otherwise, how would it know Miller?
No, it can get that from his brain, from his memories, and
from Miller's brain.
Yeah.
Oh, in that case, definitely a cop.
But I don't think the hat is meaningless. I think the hat means this, like the investigator. This is Miller when he was a detective.
Yes, the important point of the hat.
Also, not Miller when he was a true belter towards the end of his.
When he made the sacrifice and stuff, slightly different. Well, there you go. But are they all Miller? You know. Now you know we get to the same conversation, but about somebody that's actually the same person. Right. Yes. I don't want to.
Well, yeah. No. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah.
Right. I think it's safe for me to make some comments that might seem spoilery, but if you were to frame by frame the episode, you would get most of it.
Hang on a minute. I've got to revise my last position. I think this might actually be like a reconstruction. You know how the ship at the end of that one episode was like massively deconstructed?
Abogast.
Mm-hmm.
Abogast, that's it. I think that's what happened with Miller. So it's like Miller was like deconstructed and then he was put together in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of is Miller, but at the same time, It's
like a hybrid between Miller and a probe.
I agree
with that, and agree that's, you know, physically, in inverted commas, that's what this is. But I think Hamish's last point is really fucking interesting, because me 2 months ago, is that's not the same me as me now, and me 10 years ago, very much not the same me. But both, I mean, this almost goes into fucking hypostatic union. Like,
yes,
the Trinity.
I was also thinking about time frames and stuff, and is time real? Is existence real? That sort of dual thing.
Yeah.
It's like, are we actually just, you know, frames, as it were?
I've never existed before. I came into being in this moment with my memories. So if me,
if you take it
20
that way,
years
then,
ago,
then the investigator is Miller because of that.
If me 20 years ago is equally me as me now is me, then that Miller is equally Miller as any other Miller.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, no, because it wasn't a continual thing.
But we might not be.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we do. If time, depending on what the nature of time is, other than our, you know, construct of it, then, oh my God, this is a bit much. Then it could be that so much else is happening, you know, because this is one theory of multiverse as well, is that we are jumping around all the different existences and it comes back to that conversation that the investigator has with Holden, is like free will and all that sort of thing. It's like, are we actually just playing out like a frame in every multiverse, in every part of the multiverse, coming back to this one and then doing the next frame.
Because if the universe is deterministic, then technically we don't have free will. But I don't think that was Miller's point in that moment. I think Miller's point was something other than that.
Just something I want to
say quickly. When you say, like, it wasn't continuous with Miller, I think that's relying on, you know, a thing we humans do, where we make and it's always arbitrary, a distinction between the natural and the unnatural. Mm. Like, what we do is sometimes unnatural, but the rest of the universe is natural somehow. Like, we're fucking, you know, separate from that.
I didn't mean that, I know you're saying this, in
the backing. So what happened to Miller on Venus, that is no inherently less natural than a human being go through puberty, right? It's only happened once, as far as we know, but it's still just a thing that happened in nature.
Okay. I mean, just because, like, if we are just a frame in a multiverse, that doesn't necessarily mean we also don't have free will. Like, for example, if you think of the multiverse as a branching out tree, there may be many, many, many multiverses, but we get to choose where the branches
whether we have free will or not.
All of them happen, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, first of all of them happens, and secondly, it's more about if the universe is deterministic. Like, if somebody with a complete knowledge of science in the far future or whatever, or God, could look at the state of our brain and predict, you know, the quantum blah blahs that are going on in our brain, and predict which decision we would make based on that state.
Foundation.
Harry Seldon. Then the universe is deterministic, and we don't have free will. I don't believe that, but because I'm a theist.
I don't even know if one's a distinction from the other.
Well, we wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah. If this was all a simulation,
how would we ever know?
But that gets back to Miller. Like, if we, you know, I mean, that Miller does know that he's a copy or whatever, but assuming he didn't, if he can't tell the difference and we can't tell the difference, then...
But what if the multiverse exists, but there's a lot fewer branches than we think? So, for example, when we turned on the Hadron Collider, it jolted us into the weird
collider. That clearly happened.
It jolted us.
See, everybody makes that point that the Large Hadron Collider was such and such a point in space time that we're on a different timeline.
We're in the wacky timeline.
Yeah. But the point is that it wasn't the first It wasn't the first collider. No, but it's, collider.
But it's a fun narrative.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know. Mm.
I mean, it might have been an earlier collider, for all we know. It could have, you know, it could have been. It could
and
have
they
been
called
the
it
Twin
the large one because it was one of the biggest, you know.
Mm. Yeah,
might still be misses. The biggest, for all I know.
Mm. I like that they use bicycles to go around it.
Yes, yes.
That's just like, you know, I'd prefer a scooter myself, but, you know, this just... If you got to get around, you got to get around, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah, and it's just like...
I mean, skateboard. Skateboard would be perfect.
Yeah. I bet someone uses a skateboard. I bet there's a scientist on a skateboard just whizzing around the collider.
Anybody who works at CERN or whatever, let us know.
But yeah.
Okay, I feel like we've drifted off.
Yeah. Okay, all right, yeah.
Yeah, where I was going to say that we've learned a lot about the nature of, maybe not the nature of the proton molecule itself, because I think the proton molecule itself is almost becoming a bit of a sideshow to the bigger picture.
Mm.
Yes, oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. And what was the expanse has done that thing? Where it,
oh,
he's like, whoa!
Come on, you got it. We got a CGI standard to maintain.
Yeah, CGI Drew. There he is. Because we learn that we learn what the ring is.
Yes,
I think you, hopefully you, I'm not. I mean, I'm not spoiling anything. I know I'm not, because I know what the visions all meant, and I think they're quite clear. Even if you don't watch anything after this episode, enough time to think about it, you'll get what they mean. The point is,
okay. Do you want?
Well, yeah. What's your theory? Actually, that's a good idea. Let's let Chris say what he thinks.
So the one thing that I latched onto with Miller is he mentioned something about an ancient civilization from billions of years
ago. Right, yep, you've got that bit. Yep.
So I think that's the seed of what's happening here. So it sounds to me something like a civilization, very high, very advanced civilization, realized that they weren't going to be able to survive. Either they were running out of resources, or there was some sort of climate change.
It's quite explicit in the vision, in the thing. What happens?
Okay, all right. Tell me where I go wrong after I tell you my theory. Right. So they basically archived themselves up into that station. Then the protomolecule just blasts out into like as many places as it can get to, so that it could find somewhere where it can then sort of travel to and exist, or get resources to and exist and be able to be turned back on, because it, you know, or maybe it's reaching out to other civilizations.
I tell you
what was
basically
happening when it... Hey, let me just ask Chris a question. Honestly, I've only got... I don't think I understand that either. So, Chris, when he sees a vision of the station shooting a blue laser into a sun and turning it blue, what's that about?
So that could be what the alien civilization is doing could be turning their sun into a type of sun that they need for their inhabitable solar system. So like
a proto-molecule sun.
Yeah, like I want to use the term like a blue dwarf or something like that, which is obviously it's not a real thing, is it? There's no real...
No, I don't think so.
I know what you're saying, yeah.
But like, so it's a new type of sun that it needs to survive.
I think that's wrong, but I think that's how I read it first time.
I mean, for all it could be they destroyed the sun and it's the end of the show. Goodbye, let's all go home.
Blue dwarf. Blue dwarf is a theorized stage of a red dwarf.
All right, Hamish, tell us what's happened, because I don't understand that vision, so I would like to know. As long as it's not teleological, I would like to know.
Miller kind of explains it as well. It's a combination of what Miller says very explicitly, which you picked up the alien civilization thing, and our ideas we were talking about at the beginning about the dandelion thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so what we'd learn from this is that the ring is not a single thing. The ring is, as you say, the gate. I didn't actually fuck up though. I genuinely was just calling it a gate because you were talking about the Stargate, and because it physically resembles the Stargate, I'd kind of got that in my head. I wasn't giving anything away. It just, you know, it wasn't like, aha. It was literally that. But yeah, so we know. I mean, we knew in the next episode anyway. So it's a gate, and what should be there inside the bubble are loads more rings.
Mm.
And it's a traveling system. It's like a waypoint, like a station. I mean, literally, they use the word station.
Mass Effect Relay.
Mass Effect Relay, yeah.
I'm guessing. I didn't know what that was, but I'm guessing that's what you're like.
This is very Mass Effect-y. Like, this is
it is.
In Mass Effect, there's like an avatar, a bit like Miller, that actually guides them around the alien that's not an alien space station. They guide them around a thing to like work out how they're going to connect with the aliens and stuff.
Okay, right. Yeah. Well, I've certainly played the game, so I don't want too many spoilers on that myself. Science fiction's quite, you know, it's very incestuous. Yeah. Anyway,
I like the Mass Effect thing. It's, you know, good.
So, yeah, so what we learn is that actually, yes, this is, this should be. What it should be is loads. It shouldn't just be a blue gaseous looking bubble. It should be loads and loads of rings. It's what it should be. Mm. And there's two factions. There's like another. They were attacked, or there was a war or whatever. That thing with the sun getting shot is a weapon. It's not them doing it to themselves. There's a few things Miller says that gives that away as well.
Mm.
And Miller is from Miller's the protomolecule is a facilitator. It's a technology or facilitator rather than a consciousness as such. Mm-hmm. But I think we got to that point anyway. And what's happening is Miller representing the race that made this dandelion bubble thing wants to get the technology back. And for the humans, or just maybe for their own benefit or whatever, he just wants that. As you say, the one thing he picked up on is they want it all reactivated. That's what that side wants. But it was shut down by an enemy, essentially.
Mm.
That's what happened. That's what the weapon is that you see. Also, there's more detail to that, but I think it'll become clear in the next few episodes. But
Hamish,
in the little vision, Drew, did you notice the bird?
Yes.
Love it when the bird. The bird.
That
feeds.
That feeds. Feeds
that
into...
back into Drew's theory quite nicely. Sorry, what were you going to say, Drew?
I was going to say if I say Star Trek TNG, The Last Outpost, you know the episode I'm talking about.
Oh god! Not by name, but
it's one. I think it's the first one where they meet the Ferengi, and their ships are stuck, and there's a bit with Data with like a finger trap as a metaphor, and they go down to this planet.
Is that all the same one? Like, right? Okay.
It's a dead civilization, but there's this like holographic guardian that's like represents this civilization that died millions of years ago, and they talk to it, and it's got vibes of that.
It's the Ferengi are the bad guys, and the oh my god, there's a lot of things called The Last Outpost for obvious reasons.
I think you know it when you see like the Guardian fella.
Series 1, episode 5. Ferengi's blah blah. Yeah, and they're sort of inquisitored by the.
It's a far softer, more TNG kind of version of that idea, but it is that idea of, because I think the protomolecule is what the Guardian is in that episode. It's like it's lost its parents, essentially. It's lost its family. It's, you know, because it's just a technology, but at the same time it embodies that cult, you know, their culture and their ideas, as you know all technologies do. It's got something of them in it, and it's, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like
Peanut.
It's like Peanut when you went to the shop. It's howling, you know.
Also, why on earth are the Martian Marines firing and throwing grenades in the middle of the first alien structure ever discovered?
That's so human, though.
It is, in a way, yeah.
It's so fucking stupid.
The thing that sticks out in that episode for me, in that incident, sorry, that scene for me, is that Bobby fires. And that seems so out of...
I think that's a situation where she's got to prove that she's not biased.
A bit like the behemoth firing on the Rosinante.
I think so. Yeah.
God, oh yeah, because her lieutenant does sort of start to doubt her, doesn't he?
Mm. Yeah, I know. I'm putting this on the lieutenant.
He gets his own fucking comeuppance. So.
Yeah, he's now paving stone.
Yeah,
he's polyfiller now.
It's a really cool effect, though, that it sort of pulls them apart, like the Arbogast was pulled apart, sort of thing, a little bit. You know?
Like, well, you made this hole in the floor. Let's replace that with you.
Yeah, let's fill it back in. Yeah.
You're just matter. That was
you damaged it. Although, it does look like a weapon or something that's going to try and order some sort of, you know, a bit like the proto molecule reaching out. It's sort of like that, but the technology. Also, did you notice as well that the tunnel that they go through looks the same as the ring's outer stuff.
Mm.
So it looks like that's that sort of conduity thing is what the technology is all based on by the looks of it.
Yeah, it looks kind of like, it looks interesting. It looks almost scrappy, like scrap-metally.
Yeah, it's what it's like. Mm. Well, isn't that the point though, isn't it? They've used whatever's around, but there's recognizable shapes and structures that obviously they need to make, you know, to make it. I mean, if you think about like say a microchip, right? I mean, it's basically metals and stone and stuff, you know, stone and metal that we've somehow managed to make magically do stuff.
It's,
you know,
it's very clever sand.
Yeah.
Oh, also another thing about the Martians that I think is, why is Gunnery Sergeant Draper wearing makeup on this mission?
If she didn't notice makeup,
she's got pretty good makeup game, to be fair. But I think that's just
you know, TV show land.
I mean, you want to look good the first time you meet, you know, a new civilization or whatever.
Yeah,
look your best. Hot.
Yeah,
just before you shoot at them and try to blow the ship up.
Good makeup game.
Lines that tickle me. When Holden and Miller are, you know, floating down to the thing and they're talking about free will, and then Miller speeds up and he says, just exercising some free will. And Miller goes, now you're just being an asshole. Like that.
Yeah.
See, that is a genuinely copied bit of Miller's personality there.
Yeah, exactly. That's why that is Miller. That is Miller. That reaction is Miller. He's not just parroting information that he, like, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's a conclusive argument. I'm just saying that reinforces the way I look.
Well, is it like an AI interface that uses Miller because it's, you know, they know it's familiar to Holden?
Yeah.
Well, that's why I use the example of putting my memories in an artificial brain. Is that me or not? Because it kind of doesn't matter exactly what it is if it.
Okay, but here's the thing. Sorry to bring it back to this, but like, is AI a little bit like that? The amalgamation.
AI doesn't exist.
LLMs, God, do we have to be pedantic?
No, we're not being pedantic.
No, I think we do in this case.
We're making a very clear line that's not.
Because what we call AI, it's not AI yet. It is just, it's very complex, if else.
And it's also a big fucking insult to people that work in genuine AI studies and stuff, you know?
All right, fine. Yeah. LLMs.
It's just a big Markov
chain. Marketing bollocks.
Yeah, all right.
Averaging machines.
Okay, all right, fine. All right, good. Okay. So you get loads of language, you know, scrape all the blogs, all that kind of stuff, right?
Steal is the word you're looking for.
Steal, fine. All right, okay. and then you put it into a voice-o-matic and it...
Mr. Voice,
and it sort of squishes it all together. Is that personality? I mean, there's probably a lot of direction that goes on as well, right? Like it's not going to just be an unfiltered amalgamation of everything it's collected, right? Like the filter is what
people put in to get an output. That's what the filter is.
And it filters what comes out as well. To, you know, so.
Most of it's a black box, or most of it they don't know how it works. That's the point. That's why they claim it's intelligence, but it's not. It's just regurgitation, really. But
I think it's an interesting point. If you had a sophisticated enough LLM that, you know, almost like Turing test or whatever, we could talk to it being people who are AI skeptical, or you know, that
yeah,
kind
it's
of
the
AI
Eliza. It's a vastly improved version of Eliza.
Because then it gets down to, because we, I think the reason why we would say that is not an intelligence is because we kind of know, in a broad sense, we know how that works. It's picking what's...
It's picking the best option, sort of thing.
I'll get to it. Yeah, it's picking the most like, or from, you know, the most likely subsequent paths down that path. But the question as to whether that is actually intelligence or life or whatever comes down to how important is free choice, which gets down to free will. Like, again, if the universe is deterministic, then we're not intelligent in the same sense that that isn't intelligent.
No,
because
I'm not.
It's just following, like what Miller says, it's just following its programming.
Yeah. It's just presenting information in reaction to what we put into it. I'm not. Its intelligence is, I don't like, irrelevant. It's more like the personality that it presents.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like an average of the average person?
No, because it's got all the biases and horrific stuff. It's basic. The person that these things are most like are the fucking tech bros. Because there's lots of biases built into all, and it picks up things. But I was going to say, this is why I don't... Drew's asked this before, and I've never really been able to quite give the right answer, but I think I've got a better way of putting it now. Why it's not art when it does it.
And why it's not art
when it does it is, like, you were an art student, right? Mm. But do you think you've seen every single piece of art that exists? Do you think you've studied in detail every single piece of art that exists, right? No. So to say that, oh, we're doing the same thing as a human would do, being inspired by various things, no, because it's just regurgitating, something in the style of, is not the same as being inspired by. And that's, to me, the spark of intelligence is that, without realizing it, you might have seen certain things and you'll put them together. It's like we're talking about this show having inspiration from other things.
That's not saying that's not art.
But the point is that a computer can look at every single, like, you, a computer can read tech, you know, in inverted commas. A computer can process every single word of the entire works of Shakespeare and create a Shakespearean sounding thing. But it doesn't know anything else. It doesn't understand what the emotions
and things
are.
It's just a pattern. It's not got the spark of, I mean, I was just simplifying that, but that's why I don't think they're art as such, because there's no feeling with it. In your example, the distinction there is that an LLM can't imagine something that hasn't been before. It can't make the leap.
Yep, that's part of it.
I would say, are we sure we can? Are we sure we're not just doing what that's doing and taking a next step that is determined by, I don't know. I don't know. I think we do. It's another one.
No. But my point is that we don't. Right. I'm obviously not getting this right to communicate.
I get you. I think I know what you mean.
I think I know what you mean. But
we stand on the shoulders of giants, as whatever we do, we're building on what came before. That's true. But that leap is what's missing, I think. And I do genuinely think that's missing, because we can understand the emotion of a set of plays that's been read in or whatever, whereas the computer cannot understand that because it doesn't have intelligence. Intelligence is also about, soul, if you like, or spiritualism.
But the key thing is, one thing that we have that computers will not have is experience, life experience. Of living, I think that's where the distinction lies. A computer can only have even impressions of experience at best, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that, like,
doesn't have actual.
I'm not sure. I get what both of you are saying, but okay, to go back to the spark, I agree. Like, that's my emotional response. But
I know,
like,
what you're saying, okay, as well, Drew. That's the thing. Yeah.
Like Mozart, when Mozart made the magic flute, which was, you know, it was quite a big leap forward in what music was and could do and blah, blah, blah. Like, the audience walked out because they weren't ready for it, right? But it was still, and then it became to become appreciated. But it was the next step. Like, if Mozart had done drill music, it would have been literally incomprehensible to an audience as music.
Sorry, what do you mean, drill music?
or it's like British. I don't know what
post grime,
like drum and bass, grimy drum and bass. Right,
Okay. Sorry, yeah, gotcha, yeah.
So Mozart would have been 1,000,000% incapable of making the step to drill music, mm-hmm. because the work hadn't been laid out yet.
Mm.
So all the
there's a lot of technology involved there as well, though.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Music's changed over the last 50 to 100 years barbershop? Because of technology.
Could Mozart have come up with barbershop?
But it's not that drill music. So the way audience was reacted to the Magic Flute is like, oh, that's too much of a step. They still would have recognized it as music. But I don't think an audience in like 70, I can't remember when Mozart was about, but an audience back then, I don't think they would recognize, if you just played them drill music and said, what is that? I don't think they would even be able to identify it as music.
Even though it's got repetition and rhythm. And...
But in patterns that they're not geared to recognize, I think. Because they don't have that experience. I think we are kind of just doing what LLMs do.
I get the analogy, but...
I personally believe there is a divine spark in us, and I believe that we make free choices. And that's the difference. I don't think an LLM can make... I think we could have an AI that can make free choices, but I don't think an LLM makes free choices. It just follows its programming. But that depends on the universe not being deterministic. If the universe is deterministic... We're the same as a fucking LLM. We just don't know it.
But the thing is, like...
Or a Calvinist, because they believe.
No, I don't think...
Ecclesiastes.
I'm with Hamish. Like,
to me, it gets down to theology. It's whether you believe in some kind of... Like, I mean, Hamish, who is an atheist, used the word soul.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's... That's what it comes down to. It comes down to
soul to me means a different.
He's not using soul in that. No, I know what you mean by soul
in music, but yeah, they come from the same thing. They come from the same thing, though. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But the thing is, art comes from a feeling. Computers can't feel. No offense to computers. Do you know what I mean?
Just in case they become our overlords in the next 20 minutes.
That's my point. Is do we know that we are really feeling, or are we just following our programming? Like. Is it just input output, and we're unaware of that?
Well, yeah, we're biological machines.
But is it deterministic?
It's our brain that does that part.
I do think it comes down to whether it's deterministic or not, and you know, and the physicists don't know. It's the answer. We don't know whether it's deterministic or not
because it's too much. There's too much information to process it.
So yeah, we don't know.
Even if it is deterministic, it's too. Mm. It's too chaotic and large for us to actually.
Also, in which case
does it matter?
Probably not. But if LLMs are art, it's the lowest common denominator of it's a copy of art, or it's impersonating art. Impersonating.
Yeah. No, what we've got at the moment is LLMs. They are just average machines, and they make soulless stuff.
Yeah. Like, so for example, if I took a painting and I replicated it stroke for stroke as much as possible, that is like not really art because it has zero creativity in it.
Forgery,
yeah, like it's forgery, right?
I mean, millions of tourists go to see what is probably a copy of the Mona Lisa, which is almost definitely a copy of the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, Doctor Who told us that.
Like, does that matter? Yeah. Does that matter?
Kind of, because you kind of want to see it in person, right?
Yeah.
If you can just see a copy, you might as well just go to where you can see the nearest copy, right? Like,
just to expand the thought experiment, I guess is what it is. So, say we've got Star Trek replicators that can replicate something; it's atomically identical. It is. Literally, there's no science that could distinguish between these two things. And I know we don't care about the Mona Lisa, but say, you know, some great art that you love, and I make a copy of it, and you know, the two things, the original is still more special to us, right?
If it's exactly the same.
Even if they're atomically identical, there's something we care more about the original.
They're atomically identical, but that doesn't mean they're identical.
Why is that?
Because one of them has a past and the other one doesn't.
Yeah. I think that's... But why does that matter to us?
It doesn't matter in terms of any practical way.
I'm not asking you for an answer. I don't think these questions are answerable.
I'm not saying it matters. I'm just saying it's a distinction.
But I think that's completely... I think that's at the core of why we don't value that art, why we wouldn't value, you know.
But that's a market thing then, isn't it? If you can just replicate art, you can it just the value.
I don't mean
just,
monetarily value. I mean us personally valuing it, like us finding it important or whatever. I'm just saying that's at the crux of this. I'm not saying.
If you're talking about like trinkets and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Christopher Johnson, when I lived in Norwich, a colleague of mine knitted it for me. She knitted all kinds of things for all kinds of people, but this is very special to me because it was knitted by her.
And a perfect atomic Star Trek copy wouldn't be, right?
No, it'd be...
Despite being the exact same object.
Mm,
exactly. And I think that's what it comes down to.
I'm going to be really pedantic and talk about subatomic stuff. But yeah, it's not really the same. I mean, that's the same. That's one of the biggest problems with the Star Trek replicator, transporter, all that stuff is that once you get past a certain point, you can't actually, you can't measure and observe.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretending we've got,
and that's why they've got the Heisenberg compensators. You know,
I think there's enough.
If you look in the chat, you'll see a picture that I put up. I put it up for the viewer for a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
just in case you don't know the reference I made. Do you know the episode? No. It's quite a famous old Doctor Who. It's so famous I forgot the fucking name. It's the one where they go to Paris.
One Night in Paris?
No. Bloody hell.
No, that's Paris Hilton's sex tape's name.
Is it actually that or is that a joke?
I think it's called that. I think
City of Death. City of Death. I remembered it as I was looking. Yeah, City of Death. Anyway, we're way into all sorts of things here.
Mm-hmm.
What have we not talked to? I think the
My VPN's acting up. I'm gonna go make a cup of tea and have a piss and let it settle.
Space piss.
I'll be right back.
Space piss
and space tea.
Space tea.
I was going to. I was going to ask about the guy that killed himself, but I think Drew might have something to say about that, being a godly man of sorts.
Yeah. I think he takes in a lot of what's said by the godly contingent before they all split up.
Yeah.
And he's I think the whole point of that is that we can never know. And she wishes she'd spoken to her. I think that's a bit of an Elizabeth, not Elizabeth, that's the character's name. Anna, it's a bit of an Anna missing, losing herself a little bit in the midst of all this, I think is the point of that. So we'll come back to that. But I was just going to say, Drew obviously seen further on than you anyway, so...
Do you think?
Did you go through the vision thing a couple of times, or have you just seen it once?
A couple of times. I've got it through now. I don't know what Naked Miller means. The Naked Miller.
Naked Holden.
Holden, sorry, the Naked Holden thing.
Yeah. He's. I think he's just floating through space.
Because sometimes I think that's it's like a metaphor thing.
Rebirth, yeah, maybe. Yeah, the Holden part of it, I'm not entirely sure is anything other than just imagery. Yeah it's a very peely-wally, isn't he?
Yeah.
He makes you look like somebody with a tan.
Well, is it just because there's only white light in the void?
No, it's just because Stephen Strait's really fucking pale.
I'm looking at all the other it's not other universes, right? It's other parts clips in the universe.
Carry on.
Is it other places where the proton molecule has taken a hold?
Well, no, I don't want to. Yeah, spoiler territory to give you any more information about what's happening there. But the point is that there are other rings. That's all I'm going to say at this point.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil anything from that's actually in the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a sort of backstory which isn't in the show. It's just what the explanation is that Miller's kind of character, the investigator Miller thing, has explained a bit of.
Is it factually determined now that if you touch the edge of the bubble, you're just gone? You just disappear.
Yeah.
Ah no! Wait a minute! No, hang on. No, in this episode they talk about the probe that went out the way. Still given telemetry.
No, we're touching the surface of the bubble.
No, the probe did go out. Remember the two? They sent two probes.
Oh, that one that touched the edge is still giving telemetry.
Aboard the Thomas Prince platform.
Because Alex says basically that ceased to exist.
Yeah, Alex did. Hmm. Because Alex is a fucking idiot.
We should rename this podcast the Alex Fun Club.
it's not in this explanation, but it is mentioned.
Oh, that's really, I've never picked up on that. If that's accurate, that's really fucking interesting.
It's mentioned in this episode.
Where the fuck is it then?
It's hard to, yeah, is there a transcript in this one? No.
So it looks like it's waking up. The in the vision, it looks like it's
well, incidentally,
it's glowing.
Going back to my notes for the last episode, where I said blah 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 speed limit ? Because they actually they are kind of like, oh, we've got a speed limit. We now know that the slow zone is can be manipulated by the protomolecule technology. So we know that it's not specifically an 18,000 kilometers per hour limit. We know it's a what they decide at the time limit. So that's going to come to... Yeah, you're going to get more vocal explanation of that in the next episode. But the point is that there's different ways to... it does say it here. I'm not sure if it's clear in the show because it's one of those things that's much easier to explain in a book or by talking, but the station decreased the speed limit massively to make the explosion and everything containable. So the slow zone is not a specific speed; it's a controlled thing.
We got a clue to that earlier when scientist man is only speculating, but he speculated that the speed limit doesn't apply within the ships.
Yes, because otherwise,
Would get weird.
The belter guy wouldn't have, his ship would have been crushed as well.
It's cleverly structured because that's what purpose the dude shooting. Well, other than narrative purpose, the dude shooting himself, he shows us that there isn't a speed limit inside the ship for sure.
Yep. I was waiting for you to come back because Chris was asking about that, and I didn't want to say that until you came back. Yeah, that's one.
Hang on, so the guy shoot himself. Hang on a minute, but could the bullet not go at the top speed? Would that not be enough to kill him? Would that just like bounce off?
Possibly, but we know that because when Bobby shoots and the bullets stop, it's telling us that is not part of the speed limit. I don't know what speed bullets go, honestly. I assume they don't go as fast as the speed limit.
No, but it's like 120 meters a second approximately.
Yeah.
To 370. So say 200 meters a second is the limit there.
But it tells us that the station is doing things kind of arbitrarily. And a scientist Ben says if the speed limit applied within the ship, like stuff wouldn't work. I think.
There's a lot of theories.
Exactly,
theorizing about it. So the point that the point that when they start shooting their bullets, they get slowed down as well. They're way slower, you know, orders of magnitude slower than 180,000 kilometers, 18,000 kilometers a second, an hour. I have to divide that now. Hang on. Oh my god.
Oh, I'm enjoying watching the behemoth's just such a great ship to watch.
Oh no, that's kilometers though. Yeah, no. So we're talking about a hundred, you know, order of magnitudes around the hundreds of difference between a bullet speed and the speed of the ships. That was limit speed.
I like the also, same.
Well, speed. there is another clue to this. Sorry, at the same moment, we know that all the ships get slowed down as well.
Yeah.
But not from such a vast speed to another. So the people don't get destroyed, like the belt or slingshot are, because he's literally been slowed. But when Tilly and Clarissa, I didn't want to spoil it, but that's the scene that we get thrown at us next. Not spoil it, jump too far ahead. When Tilly and Clarissa are having their little confrontation, they get thrown around in the ship, but they don't get, you know, they don't get liquefied like the belt did, because the change is not, it's not so big, and also maybe the AI of the station or whatever knows the difference now, but because it certainly knows the difference between those people shooting, because they all two or three of the Marines shoot, including Bobby, but the only one that damages the station itself or the technology around or whatever you want to call it is the one with the grenade, the lieutenant. See, I've been Americanized as well, but when the squad leader guy throws the grenade, it recognizes the difference to its different threat to itself of a grenade and a bullet.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more going on. There's a lot of control going on there. It's not just like throwing up arbitrary limits, or it probably did to start with, and then sort of started refining it. And also, Anna talks about if you get a splinter in your skin, and you get the little antibodies and everything, create a bubble around it, a blister around it. Mm. That's what the purple glow around various things is compared to.
Also, we know a scientist might mention this at some point. Not yet, but like we know that like light, like the speed of light isn't like light is still going at the speed of light within the thingy. Light doesn't have a speed limit put upon it.
I mean, is it treating light like a wave or like photons? Yes.
That's not what light is either, though, but I don't know.
I mean, I'm thinking of the slit experiment, right?
Like,
Right, just to be clear on the weapon thing, it is the ring station, the thing that we're looking at, where we are, or one like it, that's firing the weapon. So it is their technology that's shooting at a sun. And I think that's the key to knowing that it's not their sun, because it's a weapon. They're destroying it. They're supernovaing a sun.
Right.
There's a war between two civilizations, intelligences, whatever you want to say.
I like when Anna mentions the. Saint Augustine quote, which is something like, if we have two books or whatever, we've got scripture and we've got nature, and if they don't seem to agree, then we're not understanding one of them. I like that as a quote. Saint Augustine, smart lad. But also, I think that also relates to the discussion we were having earlier. It's something we don't understand, basically.
The whole thing we see is a rewind. When he puts his hand in the thing, we see from there backwards. All those scenes are rewinded scenes, including and it starts with, you know, one of the things is the bird.
Yeah.
Now again, this fits into Drew. You're a clever guy. The bird. Hang on, sorry. It's a protomolecule bird, is how they describe it in this text, but that could just be fandom, or shorthand or whatever. But the protomolecule bird from Eros is shown followed by a rewinding back to a distant time, blah, 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 blah. Right, so the proto molecule bird could be a mini ring, in a way, if you know what I mean. That fits your theory that's...
Oh, I see what you... Yeah.
You know, that's the conduit, that's the point where it communicates, or...
Yeah.
And that's why it shows the Miller division of the bird.
As we mentioned in the last episode, and as we've noted all the way through, this show uses religious imagery and stuff, right? And Christian specifically, I would say, possibly even specifically Catholic. But so in Christian symbolism, the bird is the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit is what makes humans do what God wants them to do. So using the bird to symbolize all the times when the proto molecule is making Miller do what it wants it to do, that makes sense. Like the bird is literally, is the Holy Spirit in this symbology.
Does Holden have a bird equivalent?
No, I think the bird appearing then just sort of conceptually represents that. But not that we only see it with Miller, and we see it particularly when he comes through that door and he's looking saintly. He looks like a saint carrying his beads, and I think it's just telling us that. I think those are clues that the conversation with Miller and Holden backs that up. I think clues that the proto molecule has been influencing people.
Mm-hmm. And also Miller says that the signals bit are closer to the station. He said the signals better inside the ring space, first of all, and then it's even better closer to the station, and even better at the station.
I mean, it could even be this is, I think this is pushing it, but it could even be 2001 ish, where, because you know, what was the original rock
monolith
that the proto molecule was on?
Oh, right, Eros, Phoebe.
Phoebe.
It's on the moon. Phoebe.
So they're saying that's extrasolar, that's been there for millions of years at least.
They found it buried in Phoebe. So nothing's reacted with the surface of Phoebe till they got there.
And the closer you get, the signal stronger. The little bit of proto molecule on the Rossi was acting as like a Wi-Fi booster
Wi-Fi
or whatever.
Repeater, yeah.
So it's possible. Yeah. Did Phoebe cause human evolution to go in a particular way, develop technologies, and find it?
I don't think it reacts until they find it though.
But it could have been acting weekly
for
millions and millions of years to influence us to get a Miller that's born that goes and lives in the Bell.
I don't think that holds up given how weak the signals and technology of it are before it's completely unleashed.
Well, hence the slowness. It has a very weak influence for a very long time. I'm not saying I necessarily believe this, but it's like it's not beyond the realms of,
I'm literally stroking my beard here.
I like it as an idea.
It's an idea. One of the most ideas you've had.
One of the most ideas you've had.
One of the most ideas you've had.
Well, I mean, it does. It also fits in with the idea of them loving to, influence, showing their influences clearly. I mean, I don't think it's an unlikely thing. Given that they do show their influences.
I think it kind of, not in a way that I can quite nail down, but I think it fits with that St. Augustine quote.
Possibly. I mean, it could just be the case that they just sneeze out a whole bunch of protomolecule wherever they can and see what it can pick up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
because that's the thing. I don't think the protomolecule is alive as such. But again, we're going to get back to what's alive and what's AI.
I think it's
clearly a technology. I don't think there's a biological element to it at all, actually. I don't think it's got any biology.
Well, I mean, the thing is, when you get
it
down
takes
to like
biology.
Nano and quantum, like what is the distinction between biology?
There's a semantic argument to be had with all that.
It's like nanotechnology, basically.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is it's such a low-level technology that it appears to be, an organic thing, but it's not really. We see repeating structures. They talk about crystal seed, seed crystal of the thing. So it suggests that there's a structure that it builds, like a sort of hardware DNA.
What you're saying is the
and then we see that in a macro way with the big tubules and stuff,
So the proto molecule isn't, in a meaningful sense, the aliens themselves.
Yeah. It's a tool of theirs. Yeah.
But that does, then you get into the, like, you know, the hard sci-fi stuff of, like, you know, you can imagine a civilization so technologically advanced that, like, what is technology and what is them?
It's like the Drew being put into a brain machine.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You could argue.
But I agree with you. I think this is a tool they created rather than them. But I think it has some of their qualities and
whatever. Yeah. Well, you've said that in conversations of late anyway, out with the show of art being part of everything that runs through humanity. Actually, you do mention that somewhere in recording, because I've listened to it again. So
it was in Space Virgins last time, I think.
Was it?
I don't know how we got onto it, but
art not existing.
Poetry and
with everything else, not being just extracted as like, that's art, that's not art.
I love that Scottish use of out with. I'm gonna cult.
I didn't mean it.
I love it.
Sorry.
We haven't talked about Anna being a complete dick to that guy.
Yeah, that was while Drew was away, we were hanging on to bring that back. Yeah.
Where it's basically like, she doesn't really have a place on the ship, right? But the one thing that she can do is be a minister.
Well, she explicitly says all this after the fact, you know?
Yeah. Mm. And it's like, basically, she's like, fuck off, I'm watching the show.
No, I feel bad for her because she's excited.
Yeah, but it's the same. Mm. I mean, I think I said this while you were away, Drew. It's the same thing as the level where she's like, she knows she's slightly mistreating her family, but at the same time she's like, but this is what I want, you know, this is what I need to do, sort of thing. It's there's no intention to abandon her family, for example, but she can't not find out what's going on, and it's a similar thing. She's just as Drew says, she's excited and a bit distracted. And she kicks herself for it afterwards, and she, you know, probably quite rightly, because it is, as Chris says, and as she says, her job, her actual life is to be a minister. That's, she's given, she wants that to be, you know, it's not like she's forced into it, so that's what she wants her life to be. She should have listened to the guy. And
she could have been meeting
time,
God, you know, with her flock, and she was like, fuck off. Like, that's like the worst thing a minister could do. That's like her liberalism on full display here, is like, holier than thou until I want to do something, you know, and until I can get mine.
I mean, that's fair, but also, I mean, we're only human, we are imperfect vessels, you know. She's doing her best, she got distracted and excited.
She's imperfect, but she presents herself so pristinely that it
I don't think she does. No, I don't. I guess she does a bit. Yeah, yeah.
She does.
No, she does. She does have the religious thing of.
I think that's a lot to do with Elizabeth Mitchell and her way of acting as well, and her facial expressions. She's got a very.
I mean, I think she's acting the role really well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm sure she's lovely in real life. I'm not.
I mean, I've seen her in quite a few other things, and that's not exactly. She's got a, you know, she's got a style, and she's, you know, she's only got one face, her own face, you know, to work with, as it were, like every actor. But you know, she does present. She's got her face, her symmetry. I think she's quite symmetrical, and she's got a. I'm trying to think of the word I'm looking. There's a word I'm looking for that's like.
But it's like, so other people on the ship, they have their hair tied back in a practical bun, but she's braided it all fancy. It's a little bit like that, right? Like,
and she naturally
she's more decked out than the debutante, who's got one little, very little makeup.
And maybe
that's because she's trying to fit in, or maybe because like she. She wants to be like the other people on the ship because she's thrill-seeking, not debutanting.
Prim, I think, is the word I'm looking for.
Prim.
She does naturally have that kind of that kind of condescending Christian smile.
Yes.
Yeah. See, I'm again, this comes back to Mr. President, but like, I'm swayed by your argument. For me, I was sympathetic to her. I feel bad for her, but what you're saying is not wrong. I don't think we can, you know, people fuck up. You know, it's a job, yeah. But this is literally like one of the most exciting things that's ever happened in human history. Understandable to be a bit distracted.
Yeah, yeah. But she went out of the way to get her hair done nice, didn't she?
That's quite the smoking gun, to be fair.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to disagree with that a bit and say, isn't it? If that's just the way she wears her hair often, then it probably doesn't take her as long as it seems.
But nonetheless, it's.
That is a haircut that takes time to put together.
I know, someone with long hair. I mean, I've had long hair. Yeah, if you want to just go out and do something, you just go.
By caring that much about her hair, she has committed the sin of pride.
That's true. Yeah.
Exactly.
One of the deadly sins.
Oh. I mean, if everyone else was on the ship with fancy hair, that'd be one thing. But she's.
It'd be really bizarre if they all had very weird coiffured hair. It'd be like a 60s sci-fi thing.
The thing that she's juxtaposed against.
Maybe it's a symbolism on the part of the
debutante, who you think is who you might think of as being vapid, and she expresses a great deal of overt vapidity even in this episode. Yet she's still like
quite practical.
She's smart though. She's smart. Like, she's smart. She's playing a dumb role because that's, you know, the debutante role. Also, she's sloppy. I like her. She's sloppy, she's smart, and she's, you know, kind of like sloppy. Like, I think that's why her hair isn't, like, I don't think she naturally suits, like, the debutante thing. It's a lot of effort for her. Her default is, like, you know, jogging bottoms and a T-shirt.
Yeah, she's more like the image that Melba puts forward than Clarissa put forward.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, yeah. Even though it's the same person, but you know what I mean.
I like the idea of depressed shoot himself in the head dude, like, comes up to Anna and like says, "I'm sad" or whatever, and she says, let's go and braid your hair.
That would cheer you up,
that guy though, like,
right, I've got to take him out for a pee, sorry, hang on. Yeah, don't hang on, carry on.
Yeah, the guy that shot himself looked like he takes everything so seriously.
Yeah,
and he doesn't like his uniform is pristine. He doesn't have a hair out of place, and it looks like he's dealing with stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Overtly.
Like he does that. He looks like he's the kind of person that does that thing where he makes every part of him, his life, his appearance, everything pristine because he's trying to, I don't know, like console something, like trying to impress someone or. Because he doesn't know what to do, so he does the thing he knows that he's supposed to do.
Which is very Methodist. Like, they say overtly that she's a Methodist, he's a Methodist. Which is very, very Methodism is very sort of like very that, very prim, proper, neat. You know,
I heard that some Methodists consider going to the cinema a sin. not even the grotty types of cinemas, just like.
I mean, Methodists are kind of anti-fun. They're the one, they're the non-drinking one. Which is bizarre to a Catholic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You guys go on church crawls. Do they have caffeine? Oh God, do you know? Right, my dad knew a guy from a group called the Plymouth Brethren, and they're a bit like our Amish, where He got a company car, and he actually had to go and take it to the garage to take his cassette player out because he was not allowed to have a cassette player.
He's allowed a car, though?
He's allowed a car, was not allowed. I don't know about radio, but he had to basically take it to the garage to get that taken out.
There is something appealing about, like, the Amish or the other ones that I can remember the name of. There's something appealing. Like,
it's pronounced Hamish.
There's something appealing about Hamish.
Oh no, definitely not then.
Yeah, I like it, a little bit of like there was a book that I keep planning to read, keeps getting recommended to me, which is about how the car basically destroyed society.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because it basically, like, for me here, right, like when you grow up, you're almost expected to move to a city for work purposes. Like, that's almost like just a given at this point. They don't build houses for single people around here anymore. They build family homes because the schools are good and the commuter connections are good. So that's what the market is sort of geared towards, which kind of sucks if you don't fit into the family paradigm. Mm. So, which is a lot of people, and it's growing. It's a growing number of people.
Mm-hmm.
And And I think that kind of sucks because it before the motor car, people generally lived and worked in the community that they grew up with, and communities moved together. And they don't seem to anymore. You seem to have to make a lot more of an effort to know your neighbors, and then they'll move, and then there's new neighbors in, and and it seems like
that,
even...
that whole topic is also being covered in a video by Camille, our favorite YouTuber of our Discord channel. In the How Convenient video, which I will link. It's a very good video.
Yes, give it a good link. And is there some way that folks at home can watch this video? Do you know what the title is or something?
I can read out the URL.
I can put it on screen for them to freeze and bring up.
So she's Cool Cammy. That's her YouTube name now, and the video is entitled "Isn't That Convenient?"
Okay. Cool Cammy.
Is that 1 minute 41 seconds long.
Okay, we'll get on
kind of wrong. I mean, I could play that in if she doesn't object.
Play it now. I would love it. I won't get to see it, will I? So 3, 2, 1, and I'll play it as well.
Hang on. Right.
Oh. Hold on.
Oh, fucking hell. No.
Got it.
Hang on. It's trying to open Discord instead of the video.
Wow, we just invented agriculture. Now we can...
Right, sorry. It's auto-played. Hang on. Just stop it. Right, so if you guys can be quiet for 1 minute and 41 seconds, and with apologies to Camille, hope this is okay. I didn't look at our license to see if it was CC something or
Let's
anything.
Pretend it's okay.
It's CC0, let's say. If it's not, then she can sue us.
Wow, yep. We just invented agriculture. Now we can settle in specific areas instead of having to rely on hunting and gathering. I would not have thought of that. Now we can have civilization and also war and also class divisions and also disease. Isn't that convenient? Oh, rats, we invented the printing press. Now we can convey information to a large population. And also we can make books faster because a machine does it better than a person can. The long-held tradition of the scribe is gone. Now that's convenient.
Wow, we just invented the automobile. Now we can drive around and get from place to place a lot faster. And also we're gonna build our entire city layouts based off of this.
Isn't that convenient?
Walking is for suckers. Oh rats, we invented the television.
Now we can be entertained within the convenience of our own home instead of having to get up and walk somewhere. No more theaters. So that's convenient. Holy mackerel, we just invented plastic. Now we can make containers very cheaply for a wide variety of products.
Rip fish.
Isn't that convenient? Update, we just invented automatic soap dispensers. Wow! I would not have thought of that. Now you can get the soap out of the contraption faster.
Nice.
Because you don't have to push down the lever for the soap to come out. You can just put your hand under there. Ambiguously useful. Wow, we just invented the digital self-order kiosk. Now when you go to a restaurant, you don't have to talk to another human being. That's convenient.
Incredible.
Isn't that convenient?
Wow.
Isn't that convenient, folks? Nice. Isn't that convenient?
There you go.
Hey, that's amazing.
She's wonderful.
She's very good at getting a lot of information through without saying much. And, you know...
Actually, yeah, that's really good.
She's convenient. Isn't that convenient?
She's very convenient.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why I quite like listening to a lot of stuff on like 2x speed, because my brain hops on it fat. Like it stops getting bored faster.
I think there's a hint of autism about that as well. Watching things faster.
There is,
because I'm not going to name names, but some people talk. It's not just around here. It's like generally anyway. But yeah. Some people talk and you get exactly what they mean and what they're going to say the rest of the sentence within a couple of words, and you're like,
Oh, no. Ghosty knows we're talking about him. Don't worry about it.
So, you know, it's like, yep, okay, and then here's the rest of the sentence.
I've had this conversation with Ghosty.
I feel bad about it, though, but I don't get bad. He's also trying to get things across in a second language. So that's why I feel bad about bringing it up.
Yeah.
That's why I shouldn't have said
You know, I want to say this. I want to say this, Ghosty. Your English is so much better than
you think. Your English is amazing.
Yeah, it's not just like
you don't just reuse the same words over and over. You actually are thinking in English almost.
Oh, you're very.
You've got connotation and context down in a way that most native English speakers don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, don't take that the wrong way. It's just because it's you're processing it as well as getting it across is amazingly, you know, it's amazing anyway.
Going back to the future speed, though,
this is a Hamish problem, not a Ghosty problem. Yeah, that's my point. I can't. I get a couple of words of a sentence. I get the key bits, and I'm like, right, okay, I've got what you're saying.
But with Ghosty, there to be fair, there is always a lot of fucking nuance. So,
you've
got the broad idea, but you haven't got all the Anyway, going back to the 2x speed, I think I've realized why I shy away from 2x speed, and I think it's because I'm reluctant to treat media as pure information. I think that plays into the tech bro idea of what human culture is.
Yeah, you've said.
I'm not saying if anybody does it, they're a monster or anything. I just think as a personal.
Chris, I'm a monster for different reasons.
You're a monster, Chris.
Yeah, monster, Chris. Yeah. I get what you're saying, but also, you're just consuming it. You're not enjoying it. But also, I think that's where somebody like Camille's thing. If you were to sit and watch that at double speed or 1.5 speed, you'd be ruining the entire thing.
Because she's timed it perfectly.
You know,
like my point is like. Media has other qualities than just giving you information. It has aesthetic qualities and blah, blah. But some, to be fair, a lot of stuff doesn't deserve to be treated with that dignity because it isn't. It is just
pure when I watch the sometimes when I used to watch The Expanse, I used to watch maybe the second or third viewing faster than 1x just because I wanted to like remember stuff. I don't even do that no more. I don't even do that no more.
Ghosty would be shocked at your grammar there.
Hey, Ma, get off the dang roof.
Monster.
But if my purpose is a lot of time podcasts, I do at extra speed because people talk slow.
If it's like us, they're not following an exact script. Obviously, we are. This is for the purposes of, but we are
in real spaceships now.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we're in real spaceships now, and we do also broadcast on Shows the Thing. If you're out in the belt, you'll know what we're talking about. That sort of verbal tick thing doesn't convey information.
So
I can get why people want to sit in things.
And also, particularly with podcasts that are unscripted, after a while, my brain is listening to them. It adjusts.
No, so absolutely. Yeah. And again, it does feel like a thing we wouldn't do if capitalism didn't exist. That might not be 100% true, but do you know what I mean? People's time is so limited. We are taught to treat media as pure information now. Let us know in the comments or feedback email.
Yeah, they want the capitalists want to devalue everything to literally then put a cost on it.
Well, it's just slop. Nobody's talented. AI can make everything. Anyway,
yeah.
Let us know in the comments or the feedback email what speed you listen to this at.
I think our lives would be a lot different without capitalism in all kinds of ways like that.
Yeah.
But if I've got a journey to drive and it's an hour, if it's an hour, but I've got a podcast to listen to and it's like 1.5 hours, then putting it on at 1.5 fits into the journey, right?
Or you could just listen to the other.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into that. But you could also listen to the other half on the way home.
I might have a different.
I know what you mean. But then you can
extrapolate that to say. But generally speaking, living our lives on such schedules is a capitalistic characteristic. Yeah.
But I think I don't really live on a capitalist schedule because you know I am horrendously disabled and can't work and blah blah blah. I have nothing but free time, but I still feel like I don't have enough time to do and watch and play and read all the stuff I want to do. So I don't think that pressure would disappear completely. But it would be a different, you know.
I think the difference between like obviously having lived both lives, the difference between external pressures and disablement, like what Drew and I have, is you spend a lot of your time fighting with yourself, you know, I would say.
You do, yeah.
And that takes up more time than you realize. You know, you can be like,
yeah,
you know, you can go to do something and you might not even this is the thing, you don't realize it at the time. It's not until you find a reference point around things that you realize, I've just not done anything really for 20 minutes or something. But I have in my head, and I've made myself feel a certain way or whatever, and it's all happened in real time. But there's a kind of a Sorry.
No.
This is not a mental health podcast. I mean, it's bad. It's a podcast that's bad for your mental health, but
great for our mental. It's great for my mental.
Yeah, we're
health.
Just getting it. All
yeah,
out.
No,
yeah.
It's good for. I see, yeah. This is some of the most enjoyable content I've made in years. Like what I love about this, the Expanse. I was looking over the things the other day. Is I love how it's grown as a concept. Like it started out being so much different to what it is now.
Yeah, that's one of the things we were saying at the beginning, we didn't want to spoil it, but we wanted to get across to you. And it's what I've tried to get across to people who try it and don't quite get into it. It's like, I hate the idea that you'd have to watch 10 episodes of something for it to go anywhere. That's bollocks, that's bad writing. But what I want people to realise is that the concepts and the feeling of the show literally expands as it goes on.
It does expand, but
if they started off like say in the middle of series three where it's a big alien thing happening, that would put a lot of people off and they would miss the point of the show, which is humanity.
That would have put me off, do you know?
Yeah.
If I'd have started on season three, I would have been, that's not my kind of thing. You've got to have the build.
It's got to build.
I think the expanding is because it keeps zooming out. It's the thing that you thought was really important. Oh, here's the big picture. That's not important anymore. This is, and then it zooms out again. And oh no, that wasn't important. This is important.
I think without spoiling it, trying to get that across to people is difficult. You know, because I feel like I'm giving that argument that I disagree with. That you've got to give it a few episodes to get into it. That's usually a sign of bad writing where they haven't structured it well. But this is not like that. It is structured almost perfectly, especially the first series. It's almost a perfect structure.
And there's so many things, like Chris, if you ever go
not
back
over,
and watch
it's to
it,
not overwhelm you as well. That's the point, you know.
Like if you go back to the first season now, there's like so many things where you're like, there's that connects to this. They were setting up this ago.
So much of it is intentional. That's the thing as well, is intent. Peanut! Sorry, he's decided to have a crazy jump around.
I mean, we could, after we've done the Expanse, we could do like a rewatch of the rewatch and then do episode, and then do like maybe one episode per series or something.
Oh, I thought you were going to say start again. Just start again from scratch and do 100 or 50 episodes.
We got to do something after the Expanse is over. But like,
let's talk about that's a meta thing. Let's save that.
Suggestions.
Suggestions. We've had conversations about this with people.
I want to do the human centipede movies.
Yeah, that's not the same thing, though. We can do that.
That's fine, because that's only three episodes. Yeah. We can knock them out, and I think that'd be... I'm willing to do that for you, Chris.
I want to enjoy... And also, the progression of the movies. The first one, boring. Second one, horrifying. Third one, hilarious. I love the fact they just have different genres for all three movies.
I think we should do that almost as like a palate cleanser between this and whatever we do next, like that.
Something like that would be a good idea. It gives us a chance to build up to something, to be ready
to our Biker Grove podcast.
He needs, it's all fun and games till somebody loses an eye. he is getting very restless. He needs a poop.
Well, I think we're.
Sure. I was going to say, have we got any points of the show to take in?
I just want to touch on Amos. I haven't felt fear since I was 5 years old. Alex says, "I wish I could go through life without feeling fear," and Amos just goes, "No, you don't.
No, you don't." Yeah.
I think that's
Yeah, there's not a lot on the thing. Oh, there. Of course, there's. This annoys me. Naomi's trying to get in touch with Rocinante. But she must realise that there's something wrong with the communications, or they would have been able to override the message that she knows was fake.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. But I guess she doesn't know. She doesn't know for sure, so she's still frustrated. Mm. And
yeah, maybe, maybe. But yeah, we're going to start getting angry dog noises. And he's had two opportunities, two big-ish walks already, and he didn't go.
He's really not.
And he's been out, and he's now doing the thing.
I'm going to behave like that next time I need a shit. Just going to go up to my sister and start growling at her. She takes me to the toilet.
Takes you outside, yeah, yeah. Takes you out to the.
Can we have another look at Peanut?
Hang on. He's moving around is the problem.
There we go. Got him.
Yeah, you're trying to capture the picture. Yeah.
Yeah, got the picture. He's there.
Well, we've got it on video, so you know. You can get as many of them as you want from the.
Yeah.
Right. Should we? I think we covered everything.
Well, isn't that convenient?